Today's lesson will last only 1 hour because probably you know there is a stop of 2 hours
of didactic activities.
Due to a request of students representatives. C'è un'assemblea sull'ISEE, probabilmente lo sapete. I don't know where there is this meeting, but it will begin at 10, okay? So, another service communication. This week, Thursday's integrative lesson will be held in room T1. All this week. Next week's till the end of the first term in room N1. Well, today we will conclude the preliminary part of the numerical method modules. We spoke about the so-called third Gerst-Gorin theorem. A consequence of that theorem is an extension of the properties of matrices having diagonal dominance. Probably you know the definition of the standard definition of diagonal dominance, that is the principal entry on the row having index I is strictly greater than the sum of the moduli of the other entries on the same row, excluding the main entry itself. This property implies, by the first Gerst-Gorin theorem, non-singularity the non-singularity of the given matrix. That is, the determinant is non-zero. If we use the third theorem instead of the fourth theorem, and we invoke the irreducibility of the matrix, I leave the upper part of the board. I change. With
the irreducibility of A plus and in addition a modified weakened property of diagonal dominance, the modification consists in allowing the sign of the sign equal in the inequality, requiring that the strong inequality holds for at least one row.
Well, when these two assumptions hold the reducibility and this type of diagonal dominance, then we have again by the third Grosgorian's theorem the non-singularity of A. The example can be again the matrix which I showed you at the end of last lesson.
Which is a classical example.
A square n by n, three diagonal matrix, two on the main diagonal, and n is equal to one on the adjacent diagonals, by using the strong diagonal dominance, it is not possible to show the non-singularity of this matrix, since this matrix has not
strong diagonal dominance, because
circles within the series from 2 to n minus 1, we have equality between the main entry, the modulus of the main entry, the main diagonal entry, and the sum of the others. But it does have diagonal dominance in the weak sense. Because here and here, the first and the last, okay, circles, rows, in the first and the last rows, we see that main entry is strictly greater than the sum of the others. And this matrix is irreducible. Why? We did not see this last time. It is sufficient, it is very simple to check the graph related to that matrix. It is easy to find a closed path touching all vertices. From the first row, I reach the second row, third, and so on, to the last. Then I go back to all the other rows using
the fact that on the adjacent diagonals I have all entries non-zero.
The reason, the simple reason for which I have irreducibility, this is true for any three diagonal matrix. Three diagonal matrix having all non-zero entries above the two, they are called also co-diagonals. Two co-diagonals is an irreducible matrix. So this matrix for any value of n is non-singular. This is the last remark regarding properties of eigenvalues, questions concerning diagonalizability, and so on. The last topic, which requires
some interest and reconsideration of results that you know more or less well. This topic regards the norms of vectors. And matrices.
What is needed about this? Well, the main definition the general definition of norm
is, let us consider before,
vector space, usually we are thinking of C to the power n. So
let us consider a vector
or vectors in this vector space. The notation, as you know, uses this symbol. The value of the norm must be non-negative. It can be zero if and only if the vector is the null vector.
Second property,
the so-called homogeneity,
the norm of
alpha scalar, complex scalar by X,
must be equal to the modulus of alpha multiplied by the
norm of X, and the third, the famous triangular inequality, the norm of the sum must be smaller than the sum of the norms.
Well, you met more frequently within the norms of vectors, there may be many choices of norms of vectors. Most used, more frequently used norms
most used for us will be the two norm or Euclidean.
Square root
of the scalar product over the complex numbers of the vector by itself. The norm 1, or 1 norm, the infinite the infinite norm, they are defined in this way. It can be easily shown that these three definitions fulfill the requirements of the general definition. With respect to regard with what you have already seen in undergraduate courses, maybe the fact that we are thinking of complex numbers instead of real numbers. The definition are the same that you already know. Another important property which holds in every vector space with finite dimension is the fact that all norms are equivalent in the sense that all norms are topologically, one could say, equivalent There is a theorem you can find here, we will not prove it. The theorem says, so in the sense that given two norms, and two norms, say norm prime, non-prime, there two positive real constants exist, alpha and beta, such that one of those norms can be related to the other with this double inequality for any vector x, we will have one of the two norms, say, right, is smaller than or equal to beta by the value of the other norm. But it is also greater than or equal to alpha times the other norm of the same vector. This double inequality has as a consequence that if we consider a neighbor of a given vector x, where the neighbor is a ball containing all the vectors which are closer to x, less than some radius, some value, say rho, contains another neighbor with respect to the other norm, and is contained inside another third neighbor with respect to the other norm. So in this sense we can switch from one norm to any other norm using these two constants, which are independent, alpha and beta are independent of the choice of x. We consider, so practical application of this result, we can consider convergence of a sequence of vectors using one norm. If we prove convergence, will necessarily occur also with respect to any other norm on the same vector space, in this case C2dn. This constant can be found listed in the first section of the third chapter. The pairs of constants. Let us turn to matrix norms. The definition is exactly the same, since it can be applied to any vector space.
Matrices having the same sizes form a vector space, so there is nothing to add to the standard definition.
Anyway, matrices, square matrices, we are considering only square matrices, but we will see in the following of the course that the definitions we are giving now can be easily extended to the case of rectangular matrices. And for the moment, we are thinking of square matrices. An extra requirement is usually added to the definition. This requirement is the so-called sub-multiplicative property, which states, let us label it with a number 4, the three standard properties of the definition. The fourth property requires that the norm of the product must be smaller than or equal to the product of the norms. It is clear that if we have a norm satisfying this property, it will be very useful, because we have already seen less or more complicated expressions containing not only sums of matrices, but also product of matrices. Most of you know all this. We want to see more in detail a class of matrix norms which includes the matrix norms that you already know, so that we are able to give an explanation of, for example, the fact that the so-called two norm of matrices is expressed by
this formula, the square root of the spectral radius of this product.
You will remember that in the undergraduate course, this has been given as a
definition which
requires the check
of the
four properties of the definition, including in the definition also the sum of the iterativity. This is a bit complicated to do, starting from this taken as definition. Indeed, in the course of calculo numerico, this check has not been performed. Now, this is the new aspects we are developing today. We will see this, if you want, also the other main matrix norms, the norm 1 and the norm, the infinite norm, as special instances of a class
of matrix norms which are called induced by vector norms.
What does it mean?
I start from a given vector norm, say the norm of X.
I know a particular vector.
Then I consider the ratios
all the ratios
for non-zero vectors X of this form.
X is a vector, a complex vector with n entries. A is a square matrix, and by n, I multiply A by X, I obtain another complex vector. The vector norm, this is the vector norm that has been chosen, has been given. This is the same vector norm. These are two numbers. The numbers at the denominator is non-zero, since X is non-zero vector, so all these ratios are well defined.
Then I consider
the sub, estremo superiore, on the set containing all these ratios.
Here I write X non-zero.
Does this sub exist
it could be infinite. Does it exist? Fine. The answer is yes, because a ratio of that form can be written again if I compute for any non-zero vector X its normalized form I divide the vector X by its norm. Call this normalized vector Y. So this ratio has the same value as the norm or the vector norm applied to A by 1. You multiply A by x over the norm of x, the vector y. It is the same value. So I easily see that the sum over all the ratios of this form for x non-zero is also equal to the sum of these values computed over the vectors, the normalized vectors, the ball of the normalized vectors, vectors y having norm equal to 1. What is the difference? The values are the same, we have understood this well. But this set usually it is colored with the letter S, S vectors Y, complex vectors, having norm, vector norm equal to 1. This set is closed and bounded. È un insieme compatto, limitato e chiuso, compact set. The light term is compact. And it is well known, also this can be proved if you are interested, you will find the proof here. All norms are continuous functions. So, this is, I write it here, this is the sum, estremo superiore, of a continuous function over a compact set. So we invoke the Weierstrass theorem for continuous functions, which says that continuous functions over a compact set has a maximum and a minimum. So this sum is indeed a maximum. We can write that that this function seen as a function of y has necessarily a maximum over S, and we can write correctly, instead of sup, this function is well defined. So, what I want to do? I want to use this definition that now I can say it is a good definition. I can use this definition as a norm of matrices. This is a matrix norm. I can also substitute sup with max in the other expression of the ratios.
I can write also this again
using the maximum operator. This is a norm of matrix, of matrices, over matrices. It can be easily shown that it is also submultiplicative it is a
multiplicative norm. It is called norm matrix
I care about matrix norm induced by the given vector.
No. The symbol, the notation will be the same. So
I will say some more in detail only for
the most used norm, the two norm.
What is the matrix norm induced by the Euclidean norm of vectors? Well, I apply the case of
the Euclidean norm. I start from the well-known Euclidean norm of vectors. I have the definition of the inducible norm of matrices, so I can write
this, where
the set S
is the set
of vectors Y having Euclidean norm equal to 1. The result that is missing and which put together these results, what you already know, why this quantity is equal to this number. Well, we conclude today's lesson with the proof of this relation. Well, how can I prove that a maximum is equal to a number, to a given number? Two steps. Dovrò dimostrare che tutti questi valori sono più piccoli di questo. All these values are less than or equal to this. First step. Second step, they are at least one vector y exists such that this value is exactly equal to this number. So, first step. When I pick out a normalized y, I will have the two norm of a by y as n equal to. Let us denote that number with n. I have here only positive, non-negative numbers, so to drop the square root. I can prove this inequality between the squares of the norm and of this number n. Second step, why didn't just say exists such that this inequality becomes an equation with squares. To prove these two facts, we use the properties of special class of matrices we have introduced in the last three or four lessons. The first part of the proof, the first step,
We start from
the square of the norm 2. The square of the norm 2 is,
for any vector,
I consider the vector and
then I multiply by itself, I mean the scalar product, the Hermitian of the vector by the vector itself. We have used this relation between the Euclidean norm and the scalar products many times till now. So, here you see the matrix A Hermitian by A, which appears in the definition of the number n. This matrix is, which properties enjoys this matrix? It is Hermitian. First, it is also positive semi-definite.
Positive semi definite. Here
you see semi, we spoke only about positive definite, semi definite or non negative definite, positive semi definite or non negative.
It can be seen also as non negative definite,
means that the quadratic form,
if we call it B,
the quadratic form Z, Hermitian, B, Hermitian, the property of being Hermitian is obvious, by Z is greater than or equal. Semi is related to the presence of the sign of equality. Also, this is simple to see. The consequence is that its eigenvalues, if here I had definite, I had positive eigenvalues, I have semi-definite or non-positive, I have eigenvalues non-negative.
Greater than or less or equal to zero.
Due to the fact that this matrix has these properties, it is diagonalizable with unitary matrices.
A Hermitian A is diagonalizable using unitary transformation.
Unitarily, we may say. Taking into account all this, so we can go on writing what? If A is diagonalizable, A Hermitian by A,
let us call the diagonal canonical form with the letter D. It can write so from here we go on by writing Y Hermitian U D U H Y.
Ok, la matrice degli autovalori
D
is the diagonal matrix containing all the eigenvalues in some order.
Lambda sub n, all non negative we have marked.
If we call this vector by z, this is z Hermitian, the norm of z, the two norm of z, the square of the Euclidean norm of z, is this. As usual, the scalar product of z, this is z, by itself, but u is unitary. Unitary. So this product makes the identity matrix. And here we see again the non-normal of what vector? The vector y, which had norm 1. So the norm of z is 1. Can write all as z Hermitian dz. I expand this product. The sum over I z Hermitian, so z sub I conjugate the corresponding eigenvalue lambda sub I, the entry of z with the same index. So I have the sum with weights, the eigenvalues, of the moduli of the entries of z for I going to 1 to n. What I want to find? I want to see that this is less than or equal to n. Voglio vedere che questa quantità è più piccola di n. So I have to bound.
I easily bound with the maximum. I don't need moduli since these are real non-negative numbers. The maximum of the eigenvalues lambda by the sum of the squares of the moduli, but this is equal to 1. This is the two norm z, the sum of the squares of the moduli, is the square of the Euclidean norm of z, which is equal to 1. So this is the maximum over the eigenvalues is n, because the maximum of eigenvalues is the spectra of the moduli, with or without modulus, because they are negative, but in general, I must use the modulus, and I find that this is the spectral radius, of D, but the spectral radius of D is the same as the spectral radius of the matrix which has been diagonalized. So I have found the first of the two. I have performed the first of the two checks. I mean, which could be a vector y tilde for which the equality occurs? The right choice of y tilde, second step.
Yes. The last steps from rendering the corner.
The last steps of this expansion. This is fine. I consider the maximum of this number, of these numbers, and I put it as a factor outside the sum. Okay? The sum is the, I see, okay, is the square of the norm 2, and norm 2, I know that is 1. Z is yet a normalized vector as was y. The second step, the choice is natural. This vector
can be chosen as a normalized eigenvector of
A to the H, A emission A,
related to
the spectral radius. The spectral radius is itself an eigenvalue. I consider an eigenvector associated with it. I normalize it, and so, okay, I will obtain a vector yt that if I consider the two norm of A by y theta, it is an eigenvector, so I will find the eigenvalue, which is equal to the spectral radius by the eigenvector itself in norm, since I am considering the norm. This is normalized, so let me put here the squares, even if the squares are not necessary in this case. I found what has been called the square is not required. I have so let me check. N is without square root, so the square this is a problem of square roots. It is all fine, but I have to fix the square roots. N was defined with or without? I don't remember. With the square root. So this is the square of N. Okay. No, it is wrong. I had skipped a step here. We start again from this as before, but this has to be rewritten in terms of A, H by A. So again, this now you have matrix eigenvector, so we have y tilde the eigenvalue, which is the spectral radius. Again, yt. Is this right? Do you agree?
The same. Of y.
Why is an eigenvector of this matrix? So when I expand this norm, this matrix appears multiplied by this, which has been chosen as eigenvector. So this by this makes the eigenvalue by the same vector. Now, this is the number which was needed. So it is n squared. Okay. I've forgotten the operator h, and then I have this by this, which makes 1. So I have shown that this is equal to n squared, which was the goal of this reason. Is it okay now? Well, maybe next time on Thursday in the afternoon there will be Professor Beege instead of me, so you will go on with optimization part of the course. There are one or two minor results are left regarding norms. We will see those results as exercise next time, in a week, I guess. We'll consider in the following part of the course factorization of matrices, so this will be a completely new topic. Factorizations will be used in order to devise methods, the method of Gauss, but also other different methods to solve linear systems and special linear systems. Ci fermiamo qui, vi stop here. Domande? Thank you.